Welcome to Rock That Relationship, a podcast about all things relationship with Corey and Tracy.
Now let's get real and start creating relationships that rock.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Rock That Relationship. Today's episode is all about emotional intelligence. This is near and dear to my heart because I teach all about this, you know, as in my leadership courses. And this whole idea about being emotionally intelligent is just really about showing up as your best self, right? How do you want to show up as your best self in the world and interact with others and be able to kind of understand who you are and, you know, where those learning edges are for you to improve in the areas that you want. And so just to kind of get us on the same page, let's sort of define emotional intelligence and talk about why it's important in self-love. And then we're going to get right into it, talk about different activities you can do. We're going to do some prompt questions, all sorts of fun things around this topic. So for those of you kind of as a refresher or don't know at all, emotional intelligence is really the ability to recognize and manage your emotions so that you can make positive decisions, you can take action that's productive. The whole point is again, showing up in a way that feels good and healthy and authentic to you, right? And, you know, there's so much research out there about emotional intelligence that really ties back to all sorts of great outcomes, right? Like you can have better social relationships or, you know, be able to get along better with people at work or be able to actually work more productively. But it also can help with mental and physical health. And if you just are interested in any of those studies, just Google emotional intelligence research and you're going to find a whole bunch of great stuff out there. But the reason we're including it in this season here is really about this kind of self-work, self-growth, self-love piece is because understanding how you operate gives you an opportunity to better appreciate yourself. So if you come across areas of your life that you want to improve, it helps you understand how to improve them, right? Think about what you can do to improve so you can show up better. And it also helps you understand what your strengths are. Like, what are the things that you love about how you show up in this world and can validate that kind of for you. So that's really important. The other thing too is that emotional intelligence has to do with setting healthy boundaries, right? Like this idea about how to interact with other people in a way that feels really good for both of you. So what we're going to talk about are four components of emotional intelligence today: self-awareness, self-management, social awareness, and relationship management. So I know it's kind of a mouthful and I got professorial, but this is like my thing. This is my thing, my place.
What you talk about for 4 months.
And I know.
People do like therapy in class.
Basically,
like, are we talking therapy? I mean,
yeah, you know how many times I teach this emotional intelligence class? I'll be teaching it in the spring again. And it's funny how many people say, oh, you know, this was really helpful for my work setting because I teach organizational leadership. So it's designed to be like for a workplace or an organization. But how many people will say to me, oh, I love that activity we did. It really helped me, you know, connect better with my teenager or to better have family relations or improve my relationships with my friends. And so it's cool because it has such utility beyond just being a good manager or employee. And so we cover all that we can. I mean, I do it for a whole semester. There's people who do it even longer than that. So I love this stuff. I eat it up.
Well, it is interesting. You eat it up and then you spit it out.
I do. I spit it out. I try to be emotionally intelligent. I try to like help people be emotionally intelligent. It's hard because, you know, I mean, I teach this stuff. Yet there's still areas I'm really struggling with or I really have to work on, right? At least I'm aware. Part of emotional intelligence is being aware of what you need to work on. So that helps me, right? I can be more aware, but I'm still working on stuff. We're all works in progress.
Right. And the best workplace is one that understands this. It's always interesting to me because I always think, well, how could there be 4 months to talk? How could you even talk about this first semester? And what would be wrong with the business that they wouldn't bring that in? But within a business or within a relationship, there's so many moving parts, right? And such diversity, even when you have two people in a relationship, like how many different things factor into what goes into making that person what they are and how they react to things.
Exactly, right? So then you have two people and then you add, you're on a workplace team and you have five people or you're in a family and you have 10 people, right? Like you start to see that the complexity of people and what they, how they kind of, again, view themselves and navigate the world just is so diverse that sometimes it conflicts with each other and then sometimes it complements each other. But the biggest key, like piece to start with is self-awareness, understanding yourself. And so let me start with asking you this just kind of basic question. how well do you feel like you know yourself, like your values, your attachment styles, your communication preferences, your, I mean, all the things about you. I mean, we all have some, you know, blind areas or some areas where the window is closed, we call it. But generally, how confident are you that you know who you are?
I'm probably 95% confident, and the stuff that maybe I wouldn't want to admit, what did you just call it? Closed windows, dark something, like, other people are glad to tell me about. They're glad to point those things out.
They're glad? So, what do you mean? Like they take joy in saying, this is what's wrong with you.
Well, you're included in this group, but I don't think there's anybody who is in my life who's not willing to just tell me to my face.
So you say that I tell you, I think I do. I probably tell you what areas you might want to improve on. What are some that stand out to you? How have I enhanced your self-awareness, Tracy?
Well, a lot. I mean, obviously I wouldn't be where I am without this podcast and without all of our talks over the years. I mean, you know, again, like I don't go to weekly therapy. Like I haven't actually talked to my therapist in a couple months and I don't really feel the need to. And it's not like I'm not having issues or things aren't coming up. It's just that now I know how to actually, you know, deal with them. And so a lot of people have pointed out where I can improve myself and in my life. And, you know, I might have been more defensive when I was younger and not listen to that stuff. But I pretty much do now and react to that. And then, you know, like, I mean, not react, but treat it as I should and consider it and think about it and then use that to grow as a person, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's a whole shift, right? As being able to be open to that feedback and say, okay,
right.
The awareness is not just somebody putting it on you, but it's this idea of saying, I'm going to internalize it and say, maybe they have a point here, or there's something I can glean from this. Or even if I don't agree with them wholly, is there a reason why this is coming up?
Is there something? Well, and again, it brings back all to my point that everybody should have therapy, right? And that people starting relationships should use a therapist or the help of a therapist or books and all that, podcasts. That, can you imagine a workplace where everybody was like healthy, or a family where everybody was healthy? So it's not like triggers don't come up. It's not like things don't happen, but that you can talk through them without creating, you know, blowing things up.
Right.
I mean, we probably wouldn't have as many good movies because, you know, there's so many movies about dysfunction, right?
That's true.
Dysfunction's what makes things interesting.
Yes.
It's unfortunate, but it's true. I mean, how boring would these movies be if we didn't have, you know, dysfunction going on? I mean, the holiday movies, how many holiday movies are about family dysfunction?
Right, exactly. Well, the story arc, you're not even going to get published if you don't have that. But it's part of it is this idea of self-awareness. And I think what you're talking about is not only just being aware of yourself, but being open to being aware of yourself, even if that feedback comes from someone else in a way that you might not readily be excited to receive it, but kind of thinking about what that means.
Well, and wanting to know yourself and wanting to improve and have less conflict, you know, or to minimize conflict when it does arise.
Right. Exactly. I know for me, like I've been very clear most of my life about what my values are. They've pretty much stayed very consistent. I'm pretty clear about my communication preferences. I'm a pretty open book. I study myself a lot as a, you know, kind of in an effort to role model that to students, but I've also just been super curious, right? So I know a lot of this stuff, but every once in a while, like a situation will come up and I'm like, "Ooh, how did I show up there? What is that from?" And gaining some awareness. And, you know, you and I have talked at quite great length for the last several years about this idea that I can show up in my relationships, not just romantic ones, but friendships and even family relationships with people who should be my peers in either a parent-child capacity or a teacher-student capacity, where somehow I am this like wise mentor and I know better for their life. And, you know, that's something that I have been made aware of in the past few years and have really internalized that. And I'm trying to find ways to learn more about myself to mitigate that, so I don't put myself either in situations that are going to make me feel compelled to do that or check myself when I'm doing that. But part of that self-awareness came from many of them from conversations with you, conversations with my therapist, conversations with exes who told me I did that, even conversations with friends. And so that has been a big piece of my self-awareness. So while I'm clear on some of the things like my communication style, other things just sort of reared their heads. And it's like, ooh, I need to be more aware of this.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, and do you have to change it? Not necessarily, but if it's not working or if that's something that is, you know, repeating itself and it's causing, I guess, tension in relationships or unhappiness, I mean, then you do need to change it, you know? I mean, right, the right. whole parent-child dynamic or teacher-student dynamic, I mean, we have that going on, like, from time to time, right? Mm-hmm. I imagine it's exhausting for you.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it works because there are things that I have more experience in that someone may be tapping into, and there might be a lopsided dynamic. But I also want that to go the other direction. Like sometimes mm-hmm. I want to be the student and someone else be the teacher. And I've learned that about myself. And so you're right. It isn't always a bad dynamic. But when it is, I'm more aware and open to saying, ooh, I'm going to change that, right? But I didn't have a lot of awareness that I was doing that for a very long time and just naturally fell into that. But now I'm much more aware. I'm like, ooh, I'm catching myself doing that constantly, you know, saying things, not my circus, not my monkeys, you know, and I have to say that, like, that is the mantra in my head, not my circus, not my monkeys, to say, stay out of it, Corey. And
interesting.
It's still very hard to do that, but I'm like, let people, you know, live the way that they want to live. And that's been a big self-awareness thing for me.
Interesting. I mean, you are open to feedback also, sometimes resistant. I mean, I've been like a haphazard teacher to you in that way, you know, but
right.
most of our relationship is probably you're the teacher, I'm the student.
Well, and it also depends on the kinds of conversations we have, right? Like when we're talking about, like, you know, being open to like learning about finances and investments and those kinds of things. Like sometimes you've leaned on me a little more and I've told you more about the things I've done, but you know, sometimes there's been, you know, friendship dynamics or relationship dynamics and I've leaned on you and, you know, you've taught me things. So I'm open to that. And that's part of my self-awareness is saying, how do I get that feedback from people? How do I learn that about myself?
Right. That's good.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, you have to have those friendships, I think.
Right, exactly. You have to be open to the self-awareness. You have to seek it out. You have to consider it when it's given to you, even if you don't agree with it. But the more you know about yourself, the more you can appreciate who you are and the more you can change or improve the things that you want to improve on.
100%.
Well, let's move to self-management because I think this one is really, really interesting. This is kind of, for me, one of the main pieces of emotional intelligence. And it's this idea about kind of understanding what your triggers are. How you keep your cool, and then how do you actually behave in relation to those? Like some people can be triggered and you don't know that they're triggered, but other people can be triggered and then act a certain way that's relatively unproductive. And right. So what are some of your triggers that you've learned about yourself, and how do you either try to eliminate those triggers or try to get yourself out of situations where you're triggered or interrupt the trigger when it's happening? Like, how do you make sure that you don't physically show up in a behavior that's, like, you know, not productive based on the trigger? So start with that. What are some of your triggers?
Talking about earlier in our previous episodes about being a baby, right? So one of my triggers is abandonment triggers, where I feel like I'm not getting enough attention or I'm doing a lot and then that's not being reciprocated, you know? And so for me, I try to head that off by making sure that I'm verbalizing like what I need. But, you know, it's not always easy. And I do sometimes react. You know, like, I'm not getting, like, I'll literally say, like, you're paying more attention to that person. Are you doing this? And, like, I don't get that or something like that. And then try, like, I mean, I do that still. And then I'm like, oh, my God, I'm sorry. Like, I'm acting like a baby.
So you catch yourself. That's how you know when you're doing it. You catch yourself in the middle of the trigger.
Well, no. I mean, I still let that come out of my mouth, you know?
Yeah. Do you have any strategies to interrupt it or talk or do something so that it doesn't come out of your mouth? Or are you just kind of apologizing?
I kind of apologize after. I mean, it kind of happens so fast that I've already said it. You know, it's not like a 20 minutes going on and on. But I mean, I guess last night I felt a little agitated. So I just went to my room and looked on my phone at the news, which, you know, I was reading through the Washington Post. So I felt that that was a good strategy, like to kind of remove myself.
Yeah.
Like just to get a little teeny, it was literally like a couple minutes of just, I needed like quiet and to not be further agitated, because it wasn't anybody else's fault that I was being agitated, but I was agitated. So that was actually a good thing that I did. And that was probably the first super proactive thing I've done to avoid like saying something that then I have to apologize for.
So what made you realize that that might be a good strategy? Did you think about it like ahead of time, or like afterwards you like just walked off, or how did you know that would work?
It was after a long day. So I think it was already like 6 p.m. or something. And it had been a lot of interacting and things going on, and then a lot of talking, and then a lot of, I think we came back from walking the dogs and my wife was making dinner, and then, you know, her son was watching TV, but his show. And I was like, I can't take this show. It's like anime or something, you know? So rather than saying anything about it, I just went and, okay, I'm going to just look at my phone for a few minutes. And then I heard him say, well, I should go to my room and watch my show so you guys can watch your thing. And then I came out after that, you know? And I had spent a lot of time with him already. So I just needed, like, I didn't want to be like a jerk and say like, I don't want to see your stupid show, you know, which I said before. And it's like, you know, I mean, that was that whole thing. I told you about getting the TVs, right? Like each person in the house now has their own TV with their own headphones, because it is sometimes like too much, you know, it's too much. I think that was a good strategy for me. I had the means to do it at the time when I was working, to get a TV for everybody with their own headphones, not because it's like a bougie thing. It's like, I couldn't stand the conflict over it, you know? And I mean, I designed my house. I took out some walls and did some things so I'd have this open concept living area and put a huge TV in there because I wanted to watch stuff. And so it wasn't right for me to say anything. And then it resolved on its own without, you know, by me, like, just, okay, I need a minute to chill.
Yeah. Well, I like the fact that you have two different strategies. One is a preemptive, where you already knew that this was probably going to be a trigger and that everybody was going to need to have their own TV and headphones so you don't have to hear it. So having, and this for our listeners, it isn't like you're going to have this exact scenario, but the idea is kind of mitigating, right? Preventing it from happening.
Right.
So you're going to reduce the amount of time that you're going to be triggered by this because of that setup. But secondly, when you were triggered by it, you found a strategy to help, which was removing yourself from that space. And then it sort of resolved itself. So there's really two ways of handling triggers, right? It's this prevention and this reaction, and trying to do both of those can be really, really helpful.
Right. And I think that's the thing, is that, again, I mean, I think that that's what therapy is all about, is understanding what is agitating or triggering to you. How can you mitigate it? And it's not like everybody having their own TV means people are watching a ton more TV. It just means that in that time that people have, they're not agitating each other. Because it was a lot of conflict initially about who could watch what, you know?
Right.
And like really like fighting about it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, and this applies to any trigger that you have, right? Like, I'm triggered by people who are slow, like particularly people who walk slowly in front of me or drive slowly and sort of prevent me from getting to where I need to go. That triggers me. I'm very aware of it. I will likely always have that trigger because I'm a very fast paced person, but I find that I'm far more triggered by that when I'm in a hurry. So if I leave a little bit earlier for something, I'm less triggered by it because I'm not racing to get where I need to go. And so like that's a prevention strategy. But on the flip side, like what's a reaction strategy is, you know, sometimes I'll like, you know, walk around people. I've been behind like hikers and I'm like, excuse me, coming through, because instead of just sort of like walking behind them and being frustrated, excuse me, coming through. Or at the airport, I do that. I just go right by people. You know, and it's like, okay, I don't want to always do that. But at the same time, like I have some strategies. And then what else can I do? Sometimes I can just say, all right, we're going slow. Like I followed oh my goodness, I went hiking on Saturday and I followed this person down a road that was single lane on both sides. And it was like a 45 mile per hour speed limit. And they were going 19 and we had like 7 miles to go. And I was like, there were all these pullouts and I'm like, why aren't you pulling out? And so I was like, okay, I'm just going to get frustrated. So instead I turned on a podcast. And I was like, okay. So that was another like reaction strategy. It's like, if I can't go any faster, then I can at least enjoy what I'm doing. And I did that. Right. So that's what the thing is with self-management is you have to be self-aware enough to know what your triggers are and then be, you know, explore options to prevent those and appropriate ways to react that feel really good to you, but also that aren't, you know, completely disrespectful to other people.
Well, yeah, right. And reframing is like people are out hiking. I mean, I encounter that all the time and I just start coughing or I like breathing loud or something. So they hear me coming or I say something, well, like, you know, when I'm not like a foot behind them, which some people do and scare the crap out of you, right? Like I just say, oh, excuse me, can I scooch by? And usually they're, you know, they move over. I mean, I think with the cars, difficult, right? I get like that. I'm like, oh my God, because I used to be a cop, so I know how to get places faster. And then I have to do something else, like music or something. And also just say, like, this is a vehicle. Like any, you know, like me acting like that in a car is not going to help. I mean, it could end in catastrophe, you know?
Exactly. And how urgent is it that you get somewhere? Is it just me being frustrated that they're being disrespectful to the people behind them? There's a whole line of cars behind us. Or is it that I'm like,
or is it like elderly in that you could look at and it's probably like elderly people.
Yeah. I couldn't even tell. Cause I never ended up passing them. So that's what I do. Sometimes I pass them and I look in the, right. Through the window.
See
I'm
what's
like,
going on. And then you can feel sympathetic.
Exactly. Cause that's part of it too.
I'm mad, right?
These kinds of things. So
this is the relationship stuff as well, because like you really don't know what's going on in the other person's head. You know?
Exactly. And so what might be triggering you is something that's going on with someone else. And it's like, okay. So I will give you a really interesting example of this. I remember, and I think I might've told this on the podcast, but I'll tell it again for those who haven't listened to this, was I was flying back from Europe and someone, we were delayed. Our flight was delayed and I had so many connections. Did I tell you the story already? I feel like I
probably
go ahead. Anyways, go ahead. All right. So I'm flying back and I'm sitting in a window seat and I've got like all these connections to get to. And I'm just, it's going to be a long day. And, we're sitting there and all of a sudden find out we're delayed and they don't tell us why we're delayed, but the pilot says we need to have two people come on the plane. I'm like, okay, were they people that just didn't board or what? So these two people finally come on with blue vests. They looked relatively official, but I couldn't tell. They went to the back of the plane and then they came back out the front and like, okay, what's going on? Nothing. And they're like, okay, we have to have the two people come back on the plane again. And we did this over and over for about, I don't know, 45 minutes. And I'm getting kind of agitated because I'm like, listen, this is like an 8-hour flight. Right. And I got another 3-hour one. And then I got another, you know, it's like, oh my gosh. So then I turned to the woman next to me. She was sitting in the aisle seat. And I said, I said, do you know what's even going on? She goes, yeah, I heard that someone got sick in the back of the plane. And they removed her because she was very ill, but they had to send on like a hazmat team to clean the seat. And then I thought for a minute, like I was really triggered by waiting, right? Waiting on the tarmac. And then I realized when I had this kind of understanding what was going on, this sense of empathy, it could be worse. Like I could be the person who got sick and now I'm stuck in Europe, or even worse, I could be the person sitting next to that person who has to sit next to this yucky seat for 8 hours. And it completely
changed. Worse, your plane could crash.
What?
Or worse, your plane could crash.
Well, that could be that. Yes. The bigger things, but I'm saying about this specific situation, you know, I was like, it's inconveniencing me and I'm triggered by it. But now I'm realizing it's really inconveniencing this person who's sitting next to this. Right. And my entire demeanor changed, like my trigger went away. So part of it was eliminating my trigger was finding out more about a situation and really tapping into my empathy for it. Because sometimes we just don't know what's going on. And then we create these triggers, right?
Yeah. And wouldn't the world be better if people were empathetic, if they led with empathy?
Exactly. And I'm terrible sometimes at that. Like I'll jump to a conclusion. This person's driving slow just to make me mad. No, they're not. They're driving slow because they're a new driver or they're nervous to drive fast. It's their first time driving in this road, or maybe they're older, or maybe, you know, there's a million things that could be happening. And
if you're going to vomit, get to the bathroom, even when you're on the tarmac. I don't know if people know that. Yeah. That happened to me in China. And I got out of China, fortunately, but I vomited all over the bathroom, the plane bathroom.
And they still took off?
They didn't know. Nobody knew. I cleaned it up. And then I walked out and the bottom of my jeans were soaking wet with apple juice and banana bits. But nobody noticed. Yeah, I made it all the way back to the U.S.
Literally, apple juice and banana bits is
I had Giardia.
Might be the grossest thing you could throw up.
Transmissible disease to others. It was Giardia. Remember, I called you from Japan. I was so sick I couldn't even eat anything like miso.
I remember, and I kept thinking they took that plane off. You know, somebody went into.
They
that
didn't
bathroom.
Know. Yeah, I cleaned it with toilet paper the whole plane.
Oh gosh, sanitizing. Oh, awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. All right. Well, okay. So this conversation on self-management has now devolved into Tracy barfing up banana and apple juice on a Chinese flight. But, but anyways, the whole point of self-management is to understand what your triggers are, try to prevent them, try to deal more healthily with reactions. And then like what we're talking about now is having empathy for the situations that others are in that might be in some sense, like proverbially causing these triggers for you.
Right. Inconveniency to you, but, even the slow driver, you don't know. Maybe that person was elderly. Maybe they'd never seen the Sonoran Desert before, you know.
That's true. It was very pretty out there. So maybe they were, yeah.
But they should pull over and move out of the way.
Well, yeah. I two things can be true at the same time.
Right.
Yes. Take pictures, enjoy the scenery, but pull over. So, okay, well, let's move into the third element of emotional intelligence. So we've done self-awareness, we've done self-management. The next one is social awareness. And this is this idea about like how well you can read the room. Like if you've ever been in a conversation with someone and they stand too close to you and then like you start to back up a little bit, but then they take a step forward and like they're not reading the situation. They're not responding. Mm-hmm. Or a person who is talking to you and you look completely bored out of your mind, but they continue to talk to you. How well do you think you can read the room and pick up on those kind of cues?
I mean, I think I'm an expert in that.
Oh, okay. What
having been a cop and a lawyer and all that. So
how
I'm
do you
very
tell?
Aware.
How can you pick up on these cues? Like what do people do?
I mean, obviously you can read their verbal, you know, their non-verbal cues. I mean, non-verbal. I mean, obviously one can tell if they're talking to, you know, if you're talking too much or you should. And you know those people who talk too much without even pausing or asking you anything. I mean, a conversation should be back and forth, right? I mean, yes, of course, there can be longer stories and whatnot. And also those people who do not respond to what you've just said, but just launch into their own story without any kind of, like I'm trying to deal with that with kids now. Like, okay, somebody just said something, like make a comment back about it so that they know that you're listening to them, right? Don't just launch into your own thing. But I mean, I've always been, I think, quite aware. Do you view me differently?
No, I think you're very aware, actually. Yeah, I think you're really good at being able to pivot. Like if you know that you've said something and it might be very direct and someone's taking it in a different way, you can literally, your intonation of your voice goes down. You'll switch a little bit about what you're talking about. And that's kind of hard to do for people who don't necessarily know how to do that. But it takes practice and it takes asking for feedback and paying attention to other people's nonverbals, right? To be able to figure out what you need to do next. But I've been in many situations where other people are really, really not good at this. And it's like painful. You're like, oh my gosh. I think I'm pretty good at it. I think I can pick up on like when I might've said something that offended someone or when I'm, you know, going on and on and people don't, you know, understand what I'm talking about or I'm dominating the conversation. But I think there's something really interesting that you said, though, that I really like to explore with this idea of social awareness is asking questions of other people. I mean, that's what a conversation is. It's reciprocal. And I had a friend who once said to me that when she meets someone, if they don't ask her a substantial number of questions about herself, that she won't want to be friends with them. She asks a lot of questions of the other person, but was like, you're not asking me anything back.
Right.
So
I think sometimes that's like people are just awkward. Sometimes they're, you know, I mean, I don't know. I've heard people say like they don't want to be prying or whatever, but I'm like, people want to be asked questions about themselves. And if they don't, they'll say it. And then you probably don't want to talk to that person again anyway, you know?
Right. Well, and some of the things too is like, I once talked to someone who said, well, I don't have any questions to ask because there's not information that I feel like I need to know. And I said, well, the purpose of asking questions isn't always to gain new information. It's to show that you care enough to inquire about them. So like if I say, how was your lunch? I don't deeply need to know how your lunch was in order to function and feel fulfilled for the day. But it shows you that I care enough about you for you to ask you, like, how was your lunch? And then you tell me about a sandwich or you tell me about something you ate. It's a point of connection that I can say, oh, I had a sandwich like that last week. And the next thing you know, you have a point of a contact. But so questions are you know, there are logistical reasons for asking questions, but there's engagement reasons for asking questions. You ask questions to find connection with other people. You know, how long have you lived in Arizona? Do you really need to know that information to function? No, you do not. But it's polite and it's also, you know, connective.
Right. Well, I think people want connection, don't they? I mean, most people.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I would assume, but now that I've said most people, I can think of a lot of people, they don't. I mean, some things people feel like they don't want to bring up because it might be painful or whatever. And that's, I think, a different conversation for a more intimate relationship. But like in general, there are those people you meet who like seem to have no interest in like a back and forth conversation.
Right, right. Well, that's the thing. It's like, then maybe that's not a connection that you want to have as you're like, I went on a hike yesterday and I met some new people and I just asked lots of questions. Part of it was I was interested, but part of it was also I wanted them to know that I cared enough about what their responses were so we can find a point of connection. And even if we didn't find any connection, the fact was, as I was engaged in affirming their experiences and I wanted them to feel valued and that I, that somebody cared about the responses. And so
if they the same.
Yeah. You. Yeah. Yeah. They asked some questions. I asked a lot more. I'm just much more of a question asker, but I got a couple questions in there. And then some people, when I don't get any questions, I don't really continue to want to pursue that relationship because it's like, you don't really have any interest in me.
Right.
So I had someone once say to me like, well, I don't need to ask you questions because you're an extrovert and you're just going to tell me what you think anyways. Or tell me, you know, about your sandwich anyway, so I don't need to ask you questions. And I said, but it's the part about asking me questions that makes me feel valued, that you care enough for the response rather than me just forcing it on you. Like, hey, here's all about my sandwich. Like,
right. I used to have that issue with my old police partner because we'd come back on our Monday and then he wouldn't ask me how my weekend was. That was a trigger for me. And then I'd be like, oh, you don't even ask me how my weekend is. And he'd say, I figured you just tell me it. And I'm like, well, I think you should ask.
Yeah.
You know,
but when you recreate that conversation though, it seems like, well, that's silly. If you wanted to tell him, you would just tell him. But the reality is you weren't saying that because you needed him to know about your weekend. You were telling him that because you needed him to care enough to ask about your weekend.
Right. And then, you know, like calling me and all that. I mean, his wife once told me he's not going to call you. He's a man. So I've learned to live with that, but it's true. It's very different, right? It's so different. Like,
yeah,
you know, someone really cares about you, but they just don't ever reach out
or ask
you questions. It's very interesting. It's a different mentality.
Yeah. And it could, I mean, it could be gender, it could be age, it could be all these different things that, you know, or some people just aren't programmed like that. But I think that's part of their emotional intelligence is like, how long do I want to be around people who don't even care enough to ask me how I am? Probably not for very long. I mean, I'm emotionally intelligent enough to know that that's not what I want.
Right. Well, and you don't want to always be the one asking everything, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean,
I'm almost always, other than you and a couple other people, I'm almost always the one that reaches out to text people. How was your weekend? Or thinking of you? Or, hey, didn't you go on that cool hike? How was it? And then people will engage. Oh, cool. My hike was great. And they send a picture. But it's like, I don't get a lot of people who just message me out of the blue and are like, hey, how are you? Or what's going on in your world? And, so it is kind of interesting. Some people just aren't wired like that. But I also know that I don't want to necessarily have this lopsided connection with them.
I know it's hard. You're always like on the phone or chatting. You say you're not, but you are. You are.
I know. So
it is hard. I was going to message you this morning. Then it was 6:30 and I was like, oh, it's colder. And she's not going to be up now. Like, you have a different summer schedule than a winter schedule.
I do, very much so. It's funny. Mm-hmm. I know. But my body woke up at 4:45 thinking it was summer. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh. Okay, so let's move to the fourth area of emotional intelligence. This one's called relationship management. So it's not just like the social interactions that we might have, even with people who are total strangers. It's this idea about how do we manage our relationships. And it has to do with things like managing conflict, showing compassion, creating like those long-term bonds. I know for one thing for you that I've been, you know, one of the things that draws me to you is that you have a lot of long-term relationships with people and friendships. And that's for me, a proxy of character of how long, you know, you've invested in those. It doesn't mean that the listeners out there who don't have a lot of close friends aren't, you know, don't have the character. But for me, one of the things that I like is that you have a lot of history with people. And even when things get really rocky and really tough, you invest in those relationships and try to work through the conflict. And so that's a testament to you.
Thank you.
Yeah. How do you feel like you do with those kind of like what I'm talking about? Do you agree with me?
With my long-term relationships and stuff? I mean, friendships? I mean, yes. Yes. And I'm in like a weird period right now where I'm not really engaging with a ton of people.
Yeah.
I don't even know why. And like my time, I feel like time is just, I mean, it might be my age, you know, I am 55 now, but I feel like time is, it's like I don't even have the time I used to have. I'm like, how did I used to do all the things that I did? So I don't know that I'm doing well at that. I mean, my best friend called yesterday. I was like, I have 1 minute and I'm about to walk out the door with the dogs. And you call and I'm like, I have 5 minutes, you know? And then I was thinking this morning, like, oh, she's going to ask me what I've been doing. And I'm going to be like, I have been busy since 5:30, but I couldn't really tell you. I mean, it's mm-hmm. like a series of little things. So, I mean, I have long, long-term friendships, you know, decades and decades, but they do go through like, you know, whatever, like it's not just from my side, but people get busier with their lives and whatnot.
Right. Like
it
they ebb and flow.
It's harder to maintain. Yeah.
Yeah. They ebb and flow. I've seen that. Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. I know. I was just thinking about it yesterday. I'm like, yeah, for the past couple months, like whenever you answer the phone, you always just say, hey, I've got 1 minute or hey, I've got 5 minutes. You start by telling me how much time is on our clock to talk.
I know, because I feel bad, because then if you like start talking about something, I'm like, I gotta go. So I don't want like to set up the expectation. It's like I've lost a lot of time and I don't know where it's gone. I don't know where it's going.
I don't know where it is either, because you're not working right now either. So
I know.
What are you doing?
No, it's very weird. I don't know. I mean, just earlier I was scrubbing toilets and then I'm like, then I was doing my laundry and then I was doing, I mean, I got up at 5 this morning. It's now 11:53 a.m. So it's been 7 hours of a day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know.
Hmm.
I don't know. It's really odd. And we already talked about time blocking and all that. So I've got to get on that. I've got it. You know what I need to do is go back to making lists. I'm much better when I make lists.
Okay.
And then I can actually get things done. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I know I get your time when you're either out hiking or you're out, well, sometimes if you're walking the dogs by yourself, then I know I have a chunk.
Yeah, but it's like, I don't know what your sleeping schedule is anymore. So
I know. I know.
It is interesting because, yes, I'm in a very odd place right now.
Yeah. Yeah, you are.
I know.
A lot of changes.
I know. Well, maybe I'm just adjusting to those changes mentally and stuff. And I'm like in a, I mean, it's not anything. It's all me. It's just me. It's got to be my age.
Well, I mean, your circumstances have vastly changed in the last 6 months. So you're trying to work through that too and figure out how to balance all of those things and those priorities. So there's a lot going on. I think.
Well, I know, but I'm not a super productive person. Like, I mean, I am at certain times, but that's what I'm saying. Like, oh, I've been saying I'm going to get this part of my house organized for months and then I don't do it. It's like I get caught up in I told you that, like, act of living. It's like, I don't know. I don't know. It's really weird.
Mm-hmm. So it's been, I mean, it certainly has shifted your friendships. I mean,
yeah.
Having, particularly because your situation now involves having a spouse and relationship with her children, you know, obviously that takes up a lot of time and reprioritization, but it also means that investing in those relationships, there's only so many hours in the day, which means maybe not spending as much time investing in the other ones.
Yeah, I know it's odd, but also like, I do feel like that your life travels in like seasons. Like it's, you know what I mean? Like, I know that I need to put the time into all of that stuff. And I also know that I need to work. I mean, I was freaking out this weekend, like, I've got to go back to work, you know? But I do feel like if I'm working, I'm actually more productive in all ways, you know?
Yeah.
And it's not like I ever even sit down or I'm, like, slacking. So I don't know what it is. Like, now I'm just watching the one dog is limping all over the yard. I don't know how she got injured. So now we're going to have to deal with that, you know?
Right, right. Well, when you're talking about being productive too, you're talking about getting those logistical things done, but relationship management is also part of productivity, is like investing that time. Like I'm really good about sitting down and like replying to all my texts and reaching out to people I haven't heard from and connecting. I connect with people like once a month, like we're supposed to have a coffee, we're supposed to have a lunch. And like, I just make that almost part of my to-do list, not because people are an item to do, but because it keeps me on task to say, this is really important to me. I want to make sure that it gets as much attention as it deserves. So that relationship management isn't just managing each relationship, but it's managing them as a whole and saying, how important are these collectively for me? And am I making the time for those? And that's how I do. I do time blocking with friendships and relationships.
See, that's smart. But like two of those long-term friendships, those people, one became very immersed in her job and never has time. And then you'd be talking and suddenly, you know, an important person from work calls and she's gone. And then also, you know, she put all of her time and energy into raising her daughter over the last 20 years. And I've been there and on the sideline for that. So it's like, well, you can be on the sideline now, because she called and I'm like, you know, she calls when she's driving somewhere, right? And then the other friend started working more. And then that puts her in a place where she's not capable of talking.
Right.
And then, you know, it's like, okay, well, what? I have stood on the sidelines and been supportive while other people have done their life. And so I don't feel like they should take it personally. Like, I am in a weird space, but it's not about getting married and all that. It's like, I do think it's an age thing or something.
Yeah, maybe, right? Well, you're talking about all the relationships as a whole and managing those. So let's talk about like the individual relationships. Like, One thing of relationship management is saying, okay, for each of my relationships, how good am I at managing conflict? How good am I at giving feedback? And how good am I at showing compassion? Like, do I show up in a way for each of the people in my lives that feels productive and healthy and supportive? How do you feel like you fit there in terms of relationship management, those kinds of things?
I think I do really well. Do you have a different opinion?
No, I'm just curious. Are there some relationships that you feel like you show up better at than others?
No, I feel like I'm the same person across the board for everybody. Okay. I mean, whatever conflict comes up, I deal with it rather than ignore it. I don't ignore conflict, you know?
That is true.
And sometimes that means that you just say what you think and you express your feelings to that person. And then maybe you need a break from each other, you know? And I mean, I think that's perfectly fine. And also, yeah, I don't feel like I show up differently. Like, I feel like I am who I am no matter what.
Yeah. Well, I feel
and
like
I do address conflict.
I feel like I show up differently depending on who the receiving person is. Like with you, I can be a whole lot more direct and give feedback. And yeah, I know you'll take it and you can do that with me and we'll just like have our moment. We'll get it out there. We'll get it done and we'll move on. And you and I very, very rarely ever harbor a conflict that goes beyond a conversation. There are other people where I have to tiptoe around a little bit, be very gentle with how I give feedback, you know, and be less direct because I know that they won't receive it the same way. And, So I don't necessarily feel inauthentic. I just feel like I'm able to maneuver a little bit depending on who's on the other end of that. And that's part of my emotional intelligence is to say, the way that I talk with you, Tracy, is not the way that I would talk with another person in my life who's much more kind of sensitive or, you know, kind of maybe not as confident as if I were giving them feedback about something, you know? And so that's part of it is sort of knowing who your audience is and toggling around.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I mean, yeah, I'm pretty much the same even with clients, you know?
Yeah.
I'm very direct and that's just about it. Like, there's not much else there. I mean, I'm very loyal and good friend, but also I'm very direct. And that's the other thing is like right now I'm just in a weird space, you know?
Yeah.
Where time is like, it just doesn't, I don't know. I just don't seem to have enough of it. And yet at the same time, I'm very satisfied and like, fine. But I don't know. It's very weird.
Yeah. Well, you talk about therapy. You said you haven't gone to therapy lately, but you talk about the importance of therapy. Maybe this is a good thing for a therapist to talk with about this.
I think it's more like a time management person, but you and I have talked about it. I'm just not good at it, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, part of time management is actually physically managing your time. And part of time management is prioritizing what's important to you. And
well, I need to make lists. This is an ADHD thing.
Well, I mean, part of it is that, but also prioritizing because you might spend a whole lot of time doing one thing that you realize was not a useful, you know, time spent, right? Like, and then you're like, oh, but I didn't have enough time to do this. And I think you've reprioritized by having like your upcoming pickleball tournament. All of a sudden you seem to find hours and hours and hours every day to go play pickleball. So that's a reprioritization, right?
It feels a social need. Yes. And then yes. I think, oh my God, I better be doing my website and get my business up and running.
Yes, perhaps. But I'm just saying like that's reprioritization is under. So it's not just managing your time. It's basically saying what's important to me. And right now what's important and urgent to you is training for this pickleball tournament next weekend.
Oh my God. It's because I don't want to disappoint Stuart. And he asked me, and this is the second time he's asked me to be his partner and he's moving to California. I know. And I thought about it today. I thought, am I doing this for him or for me? Well, and if I'm doing it for him, I better bring it because he wants to win. But, you know, it is, I've had this before where I'm like, oh my God, I'm over 50. Do I really need to be playing pickleball? And then I see all these people like winning tournaments and everything and they're retired. But then I'm like, well, I'm not retiring for another 30 years, but you know, it gives me joy, brings me a lot of joy. And I think that that's the thing, right? Like, it's like, what are the person's skills? You know what I mean? Like, I only have so many skills. So I feel like life is, it doesn't look like it to other people. Maybe that life is difficult for me, but I feel like with the ADHD mind that I have, like the brain, it's just like, oh, everything is so hard. It's very hard to accomplish anything.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to start making lists and let's see if that makes a difference.
Well, let me know. Definitely.
Okay.
Wow.
I will. And now we're going into your, cutting into your lunchtime.
I know we are. But I'm just want to mention one thing about relationship management. So this is one area that I've really tried to work on, this idea of conflict, dealing with conflict, right? And showing compassion. And this is, I mean, this takes a conscious effort for me to have a compassionate conflict approach, right? Where I'm not in it to win it. But I'm in it to like understand what the other person is, where they're coming from and how to best kind of solve whatever the situation is. This has been hard to balance with my, you know, parent, child, teacher, student thing, because sometimes I, you know, I come from a place of like solving the conflict means I get my way because it's obviously the right way. And so the conflict might be resolved, but the relationship is harmed because I didn't really honor the other person. And so I have to be really careful about that because sometimes there is a quick solution in my mind to a conflict, but the conflict is less task oriented and it's more relationship oriented. And if I shove my answer, mm-hmm. it's just going to harm the relationship even more.
Yeah. Well, what's more important to you, being right or being having the relationship?
Sometimes being right.
Yeah. I was going to say,
but I mean, but I've learned over the years really that it's really about if I want that relationship and it's important to me, then that has to take the front seat sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes. And I used to just be in, you know, again, fight to the end so I could be right. But that doesn't I mean, at the end, you don't get a scorecard with how many times you were right in a conflict with someone. You don't. There's no medal that says you were right 82% of the time. What at the end of your life, you're looking back and thinking, who were you connected to? Who cared about you? Who did you love? Like, those are the things that matter, right? And so winning conflict isn't really productive in that sense.
But managing conflict is important.
Right,
managing
it.
And not avoiding it, yeah.
Exactly. Dealing with the conflict, being compassionate and considerate and respectful, and listening to everybody's opinions and trying to come to a solution together is really the best way. But it doesn't always work that way, but it is certainly an ideal. So, all right. Well, let's just end with a couple recommendations. I'll give a couple recommendations to our readers for some ways to enhance emotional intelligence. And then Tracy, if you have others want to add on, that'd be great. But some of the best ways are through self-assessments. We actually have an episode earlier on in our series about self-assessments where you can learn all about what your strengths are and your skills and your communication styles and preferences. These are really good to help you get to know a little bit about who you are. A lot of things around like journaling and therapy, support groups and processing with others, basically doing some meaning-making work, whether that's through writing or talking, that is also really important. The other thing too, and Tracy, you mentioned this, was just getting feedback, seeking it out, being open to when you get it. Like, you know, what is it? If you're doing something that might be received by someone in a certain way, kind of explore, is it you or is it how they're receiving it through their own lens? What's happening? But at least take a moment, a pause, just to say, let me look at this rather than rejecting it. And then some of the things I know you do are things like books, articles, podcasts. I do a lot of like classes or seminars or certifications, or where you can actually just like really do some intentional work or read about new concepts related to, you know, emotional intelligence and how to develop, you know, strategies and like with worksheets and workbooks and all that fun stuff. So that's also out there. So those are some of the things I found very useful. What, Tracy, is there anything in particular out of those items or anything in addition to that that you found are useful?
No, I mean, I think all those things are great, except for journaling. I don't do that.
No. Journaling, no. I mean, meditation, if you sit and you reflect, right, you know, like that could be a thing for people. I mean, I find that understanding yourself is the foundation, right? So self-assessments, right, and figuring out who you are, getting feedback, but then being able to talk through things with others is really important. So lots and lots of ways to do that. But
agree.
Awesome. Well, this has been quite the journey, figuring out if we are indeed emotionally intelligent individuals, but always areas to work on as we talk about self-growth and, you know, self-work to self-love. And, you know, if you love, you know, to enhance the love of yourself is investing in who you are and showing up in ways that you feel really good about. And that's, you know, a lot of it is through emotional intelligence. All right.
That is correct. I didn't know if that was your ending or not, but I have to tell you, I was listening to this spoken word poetry this morning, and the woman was talking about how she met this woman, and this woman was saying all these nasty things to her, and she's like, what is your, you know, I did not enjoy meeting you, and what's your name? And that lady was like, it's same, it's, I'm you. And basically, she was having a conversation in her head about herself, like, so all of the things that other people had said about her. And so I think, like, looking at all of these things, like, it's so important to know yourself and to like yourself. And you just said to enhance self-love. So, like, the whole point is you're with yourself your whole life. And so you've got to like yourself and you don't need other people's judgments. Yeah, you can, you know, work on yourself, take feedback, but you don't have to take other people's criticism and, you know, let them determine who you are and how you should be. Like, you have to be happy with yourself.
Exactly. Let's end there. That's awesome.
Okay. Go eat your carrots.
All right. I'm going to go eat my carrots. Well, to all of our listeners out there, until our next episode, go out there and rock those relationships. If you liked what you heard, check out our show notes for resources from today's episode. Make sure to follow us on Facebook and Instagram under Rock That Relationship and go to our website at rockthatrelationship.com for updated episodes and more great information.
Thanks for listening. Now go rock those relationships.